Good old Nick is the head of research for CoreLogic. Welcome, Nick. It's really nice to have you here with us this morning, and thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Hey, we just need your video up for 1 second, and then you're good to go. I'll just start with how we're going to go today. So basically, this is a webinar. So this is the Bringing the Expert series, which we're running for financial advisors. And this is our seventh one, I think it is today. So if we start to lag and the internet isn't as good as it has been, we will go to audio only. So if we flick out and we start to lag, we will go to audio only as a first means of countering that. Sometimes my teenagers get up earlier rather than later, which puts a bit of pressure on my street. So the format today is that Nick will speak and you can ask questions down the side. Everybody has got their audio and video off, so it's not distracting with the volumes that we have on online. And so Nick will do a quick presentation over you, well not that quick, some in-depth and insight and in-depth knowledge on the property markets and what's happening and what they think this year is happening. And during that you can chat down the side, and at the end of that I'll ask questions on your behalf of Nick, the questions that you have asked on the side. So Nick, very unusual times, right?
Yeah, crazy times, all right, yeah.
Yeah, some things we haven't seen before, and obviously we're all interested in how this is going to impact on the property market. So I'll pass this over to you. Nick, it's all yours.
Awesome, thanks Katrina. Yeah, look, it is absolutely crazy times, and it's fair to say that, you know, we've been inundated with questions from all over the industry, just wondering, you know, what's likely going to happen and what do we have to try and get a hold on what's likely to happen. So yeah, nice to come along and have a chat to you guys. As Katrina said, very keen to get this interactive. I do have probably an opening spiel of about 10 minutes maybe. I'll give an overview of sort of where we think see things at and where we think things are going to go. And I've got a bit more content for later on if that doesn't get teased out from the question. So we'll get started, and then I'll sort of see if we get any questions coming through. And look, you know, unprecedented is the word that has absolutely been bandied about, and that's absolutely true. We, you know, in any times of this and any economic shock comes along, any time where we see something change significantly, we always look to the past to say, has this happened before? Have we seen downturns of before? Especially for the property market. And so that's exactly what we did this time around. And we have looked at the last three downturns. The most recent one, of course, being the global financial crisis in 2008. And back then we did see values drop by 10%. The recovery took about 3 years across the nation, but that did, of course, differ regionally. And then the prior downturns, early 90s and late 90s, when New Zealand property market did see a downturn, you know, prices only dropped 5% and 3% respectively and took about a year to come back. So, you know, initially we were thinking, you know, if we didn't compare it to that, we might see some downturn in values, certainly going to see a reduction in values, most significantly because people can't, pretty much can't trade right now. But what's the impact on values going to be? But I think it didn't take too long for us to realize that this is so different, and comparing to the GFC just wasn't really comparable. So, of course, we'll take some lessons from that. There could be you know, some of the recovery might look similar. We just don't know. But what we've really turned our mind to is to try and understand what data points, what information do we have that's really fast moving that measures what's happening right now, to try and understand what sort of impact this is going to have on the market. So, you know, what we saw before lockdown, and actually it was quite interesting because before the lockdown was announced, you know, there was nervousness around the country. We knew there was going to be economic uncertainty. We started to see the borders be closed. And so people knew there were going to be some impacts to jobs, to tourism and the like. And we did see behaviour start to change. And we saw a lift in listings about 2 weeks prior, probably about 10 days prior to the lockdown, before we got the information of the lockdown, where people then knew, you know, you weren't essentially going to be able to settle on property throughout the four-week period or the minimum of four-week period of lockdown. So we saw a lift in listings, and that to us was telling us, well, this could potentially be people who are nervous about income, nervous about jobs, and may end up, you know, wanting to raise some funds before things get worse. And to do that, they were going to sell some property. So it could be investors, it could be other people who own their property and maybe were looking at downsizing or otherwise. Maybe people that bought recently, highly leveraged, close to that 80% LVR or 30, 70% LVR loan-to-value ratio if they're an investor. But of course, pretty quickly the next week, we found out that lockdown was happening, and so listings plummeted away. No one was going to list, knowing they couldn't sell. Yes, you could still have it, you know, online, but you weren't going to be able to do too much activity, I suppose, in terms of open homes. So we saw that drop away significantly. And what we saw drop first was what we track is when real estate agents who run an appraisal on your property, we call them customized market appraisals, CMAs, and they run reports through our tools. And we saw the significant drop away of those reports being run by those agents to the point where I think about 2 or 3 days ago, it was down about 85% year on year. So no surprise there. You know, they've essentially gone into lockdown themselves. They can't do much work, so they've stopped running those appraisals. But really interestingly, over the last 2 days, we've seen that number start to gradually lift again. And we're wondering, we actually had a, I've got a weekly podcast that we run at CoreLogic, and we've been having guests on recently. And we had the owner of Tall Poppy Real Estate in Wellington on earlier this week. And he said, you know, his advice was that he would be running as many CMAs as he could. Should be contacting all your all your previous clients, anyone you've talked to about property in the past. Let them know what the value of their property is so that they're all ready to go once we get outside the lockdown. And so I wonder if, not necessarily heeding his advice, but they were thinking the same thing. And now that we're within that two-week period of hopeful end of lockdown, maybe those agents who did take a bit of a break, and fair enough, in the first week or so, have now started to kick back into action and think, okay, we need to be prepared for you know, getting things going as fast as possible once this lockdown ends. And to do that, they need to engage with some clients, engage with some previous customers, and get the flows starting already. So there's a good sign there for activity. And that, of course, is our hope in general, I suppose, for many people that are tied to the industry, is that, you know, there's just a blip in activity. You can't trade for 4 weeks, but the idea being that hopefully most of that activity is just deferred. And if you'd already agreed something and your settlement date was in this 4 week period, just push that settlement date out until just after the lockdown, and then transact then, because of course you can't move house at this moment in time. So that's a couple of the things we've been tracking in terms of activity, and those CMAs are going to be, you know, a really important data point for us to track over the coming weeks as we do come out of lockdown, whenever that might be. And that's really what everyone's wanting to know, is how are we going to come out of this? Because, you know, one of the webinars I've done, someone said, you know, is there an overreaction in terms of some of the economic headlines that are coming out? And I think that, I don't think it is in terms of the impact to the economy. It is going to be significant. We are going to see a significant increase in unemployment. You know, the forecasts are 8 or 9% from where we're at 4%. The loss in GDP is going to be significant, you know, 6 or 7% over the year. So you can't underestimate the impact to the economy of essentially shutting down for a while. But not only that, that it'll take a while for, you know, us to move back into any level of normality following the lockdown as well. And that will have a significant impact, and, you know, already in Q1, Q2, and probably into Q3 at least, before we see some sort of level of economic activity return to normal. But we believe property activity could return sooner. And, you know, one of the other things when you talk about unprecedented, in terms of, you know, what we're going through at the moment, the shock to the economy, the global impact here. But one of the other things that is unprecedented, we've never seen before, is the support from the government and Reserve Bank. And the package that's been put together is just enormous. And trying to stem the tide of the impact to households and to businesses is enormous. So, you know, we've got from the Reserve Bank, they had an emergency slash to the official cash rate very early on in the piece, down to 0.25%, and a promise that would stay low for at least a year. So low interest rates, you know, should ensure that people who have a mortgage and who can still afford and still have a job to be able to get a mortgage to buy a property can continue to do so with relatively low serviceability. So that's obviously a huge part of it. And then the government support, you know, trying to defer any troubles people get in. Can we support some businesses with their wages so that people don't lose their jobs straight away? They can continue, and hopefully over that period of having that wage subsidy, they can get all their other expenses in order, figure things out before moving through to, you know, whatever the future looks like in terms of, do they get a new job, or does their business go back to normal? And then, of course, you've got the banks themselves stepping up with the mortgage deferment scheme. So deferring payments on mortgages is obviously worthwhile, recognising that, you know, people don't get off paying their mortgage. They will have to pay that back, and it will mostly accrue interest over that time. And the term of the mortgage stays the same as well. So it could be more difficulty in the future, but in the very short term, where the risk was a significant, you know, hundreds of thousands of people in trouble and having to, you know, potentially have forced sales or at least stressed sales. Hopefully that will delay that to a point where it won't be required as much in the future. And that's why this is so unprecedented as well. And that is, I think, why there's a bit of quiet confidence that the property market should hold up in the short term while people get their things in order. So that's ultimately where we see things going. We're not saying that there's not going to be a downturn in property prices. We might see a drop. You know, some people will still want to sell property, and they may be willing to take a lower price today or in 2 weeks' time than they were a month or 2 months ago, simply because their expectations have changed. So previously, you know, people would be comparing their property to their neighbors who sold 6 months ago, and I want to get $1 million as well. Now, you might not be so keen to do that. You might be happy to go, well, I actually bought it 10 years ago. I'm happy to take, you know, what would have been 100 grand less than otherwise. And if that starts to happen, we could see prices start to drop as that sort of settles the market and shows the market what properties are worth. I see there's a question there. I think it's probably not a bad time to turn to this. And I think we've been saying a similar thing, actually, is that we could certainly see this moving from a seller's market to a buyer's market. The one constraint on that is going to be what happens with listings. So previously, moving into this, you know, we had some momentum. There was growth in the property market. And one of the factors to that was we had such low level of listings. So there's just nothing for sale. And that's been the case around most of the country, not all the country. Auckland's actually had an increase in listings over the last few years as prices have been so expensive and affordability has made things so difficult. But around the rest of the country, listings are so low. And so it's really going to depend on what happens on that side. If we get a significant lift in listings and then buyers have a choice, absolutely, it's a buyer's market. They know that some people want to get out fast and there's heaps of property available. That's a very big buyer's market. If there's not many properties there and there's, you know, enough buyers to keep up some demand, then, you know, there still could be a bit of an equilibrium there where you still might see prices hold or even lift in certain parts of the country. And that's one point to be really clear about here, is that while we are in shutdown right now and almost every business will be impacted to some degree, longer term, some industries are going to be more impacted than others. And, you know, it's not much of a surprise. It's tourism. It's going to be the restaurant, hospitality industries. Those are going to take the longest to come back again. And, you know, from a tourism perspective, if our borders get shut or restricted for a longer period of time, and then you even get some nervousness around the world to travel, even if we get this under control, you know, maybe the rest of the world isn't quite as lucky or has been quite as proactive. And so there's still going to be a significant reduction in international travel around the world. And that will flow through to those tourism hotspots, Queenstown, Rotorua, Thames Coromandel, all those places as well. So yeah, maybe not straight away to a seller's to a buyer's market, but certainly if we see demand hold up and we do see supply hold up as well, and people do want to get out and they're willing to take lower prices, that will start to turn to more of a buyer's market later in the year. Pre-election, look, it's a good question and one that quite maybe surprisingly haven't actually had yet. And maybe it's just one of those things that with everything going on, it almost doesn't matter anymore. I'm sure there's some consideration for moving the election date, so that could have some influence. And of course, every time we have an election, we do see a bit of nervousness. We do see a pullback in sales volumes. We do see a slowdown in the market as people consider, what if we get a change in government? What's that going to mean for the future? In general, my position, say 6 weeks ago, was that I wasn't expecting as much of a slowdown this year, mainly because we've got the Labor-led coalition government as opposed to a national one. And typically nervousness comes around national switching to Labor, mostly because Labor are more restrictive on the property market. So any gains that have been had, if Labor come in, and this is what happened last time, and they were talking quite significantly about the potential of a capital gains tax or a more comprehensive capital gains tax, that's where the nervousness came in and people started to think, actually, Labor might win this. what is that going to mean for the property market? Oh, I'm going to hold tight and wait a little bit. At the moment, you know, it probably depends on the likelihood of Labor continuing to hold power in some way, shape or form, or if it looks like National is going to get in. You know, if you talk about capital gains tax, Jacinda Ardern has essentially ruled out looking at or entertaining the idea of a more comprehensive capital gains tax while she's in power. So, you know, I would say that considering that's probably one of the most significant potential changes to the market, and it's unlikely no matter who wins, I wouldn't expect too much nervousness due to simply the election. Of course, everything else going on is going to influence things, but I wouldn't expect too much of a change anyway. I'll take a quiet breath and have a look at some notes I've got, but if you've got any more questions, please throw them out.
I'll just ask you a quick question, Nick, while you're taking a drink from that very nice looking water, I've got to say. So districts, what's the impact on the districts, and what district is more likely to recover faster or slower, or what are the considerations in that area?
Yeah, cool. I've got some notes here that I'm just going to refer to, because we've done some regional work. It's pretty subjective in terms of what we look at. Is Stats New Zealand have really good data around what industries support each local economy. And then we went through and said, well, which industry is going to be affected more? And then any region or area that relies significantly on those industries might see more pain in the short and medium term before we know really what happens in the longer term. So if you look at something like that, you know, what we've gone through and said, accommodation and food services going to be significantly impacted, arts and recreation services, you know, you're not going to have many big gatherings of people happen for a long time. So anyone that relies on those industries are going to be slowed down. Forestry and logging as well, essentially because of the export market, wood product manufacturing, some seafood processing, pulp and paper manufacturing. So some of those factory type works as well. And then, you know, there's a whole bunch of different things here. I'm not going to reel them all off. But if you go the other end, you know, there's some areas, and Wellington would be one of these that obviously supported by the government industry or government employees. And you wouldn't think there's going to be too much impact there. There's lots of money flowing from the government. So Wellingtonians shouldn't fare too badly, or certainly a big chunk of them who are in the public service. Local government, you know, it's of course IT. The owners of Zoom will obviously be doing all right, so IT should be doing better at things like this. So we've sort of gone through all this industry. There must be a list of, I don't even know, 50-odd there. And then we just look at what regions are so reliant on them. And as I said, Queenstown is not a surprise. It's pretty clear why. But if you look at the figures, accommodation and food services makes up 17%, over 17% of the local economy in Queenstown. So that's going to take a massive hit. The second one is property services. So it might not be too badly impacted, as we're talking about today, if property does okay. Then you got professional, scientific and tech services, fine, which is about 7% of the GDP. Arts and recreation, 6%. And construction services, which we put in the middle category, about 6%. So you look at that and you've got sort of 25, 30% of their GDP significantly impacted by what's going on. So we'd expect Queenstown to certainly feel the pinch here. From a property perspective, property is very expensive. We also had the foreign buyers ban come in, what was that, 18 months ago? And so we've seen demand for property there reduce because people who live overseas or are not resident and citizen here can't buy property there. So demand, expensive, people can't have jobs, you know, you've got no one to even rent the places out. Airbnb is going to be impacted. It really goes without saying Queenstown's going to be hit quite hard. Outside of that, that's an interesting one. I know that's not a factor.
So Nick, when you say hit quite hard, what does that look like in terms of a real drop? So we know the district's going to be under a bit of duress and financial strain for a while. So, and it's going to take a while for that to pick up. What does that translate through into actual dollars for property values?
Yeah, look, I mean, that's crystal ball gazing, obviously very difficult to do. I think, you know, if you look at the GFC, prices drop 10%, and that happens when people lose their jobs and can't afford to pay their mortgage or can't afford to rent, and so they move elsewhere. And so if you look at certain regions, because in some regions we would have seen a 15 to 20% drop in the GFC. And so I think when you're talking about what is the drop we're expecting, high job losses in Queenstown, people not able to afford mortgages if they own, rent if they rent, and so they're going to move elsewhere for a job. And if that happens, you are likely to see less demand, people not able to pay those prices. We could see a drop in prices of, you know, and it's obviously very difficult to do any predictions here. There's no model that's going to tell you. We've never been through this. It's purely speculative. But look, 10 to 20% wouldn't be probably unexpected for Queenstown. And look, it could be less and it could be more. It's just so hard to tell.
We've got a great question here, Nick, around rental properties and the reduction of overseas students and immigrants coming in. What's going to be the impact on the rental property market?
Yeah, look, I think it's going to be significant. We have looked at some Airbnb data to see some of the areas where Airbnb is most popular and where Airbnb or short-term accommodation is a significant proportion of the rental market or of all properties around. And it is those places I mentioned, Queenstown, Auckland as well, Auckland Central, Wellington, the big centres, Christchurch, Thames Coromandel, Rotorua, there's a few others as well. Those areas, those places that have got lots of short-term accommodation options, they're going to have to shift those to either long-term rentals or they're going to end up going to market to sell it if they can't handle having a vacancy for too long, if they can't hold up and they can't keep their costs going, keep up with their costs. So there is a big question there. We don't know the answer of how much is going to go to long-term and how much will go to be sold. Potentially most try to go to long-term first, and if that doesn't work, they then go to sell. So again, the hope will be that there's not a massive flood to market of all these people trying to sell, or else you might see, as I said, that oversupply of properties, and you might see prices come down in some of those areas. And from the student perspective, same thing really. And so I had a seminar yesterday with some valuers, and what I was saying to them was, valuations of properties that are absolutely built or bought with the intention of either of those two markets or both of those two markets, so short-term accommodation, so central city apartments often, as well as holiday homes, and also for foreign students, especially the likes of Auckland Central, again, apartments and central city properties. If you've got a property that is tailored towards those type of renters, those type of tenants, then yeah, there is a potential there's going to be a significant reduction in demand for those. And so you need to think about what you're going to do with those properties. Can you open up to a different market? Or you might look to move that on. And that's going to be the key thing here, is there's not going to be one movement for all types of property for all regions. It's going to be different across the board. And when we look at Auckland Central, for example, when you look at who buys Auckland Central apartments, and we have our buyer classification data, which classifies every single purchase in the country. According to first home buyers, someone who's moved home, investors, and depending on investor size, so how many properties do they own? When you look at that, you know, it's roughly 38 to 40% of all sales go to investors every month. 25% of sales go to first home buyers, and about 27, 28 to movers. When you look at smaller properties, townhouses and apartments and the like, in Auckland City, you're upwards of 50% for investors. So absolutely, those are investors who buy those properties, put them straight on the market and rent them out to students and short-term accommodation. So that part of the market, we're certainly saying, could be up for more of more weakness than some others.
Great, thanks, Nick. One of the questions on the side is, what should be on the market for new builds ready for sale and turnkey builds over the next 12 months? You kind of touched on that, but not totally for the new builds.
What is it? What should be on the market?
Yeah, what should be on the market for new builds ready for sale and turnkey builds off the plan builds over the next 12 months?
Ah, right. I mean, it depends. It probably depends on that type of property. So those turnkey, those smaller properties are going to potentially struggle to settle at the same price or be worth the same price they were when they were agreed upon. And so there'll be some people that'll be questioning what they do with those properties. Anything that is already in play, obviously, will be harder to change that. But anything that hasn't been agreed yet might slow down. And of course, we're going to go into a period of non-construction right now. But the hope, again, from the construction perspective has been that it's just a minor blip and people get back to building properties on the other side of this. I think that, you know, we have to expect that there's still going to be significant demand for property in terms of people need to live in a house. We you know, we have been underbuilding for a long period of time. And while we don't really tend to put a number on how many properties short we are, simply because it's very difficult depending on when you pick the equilibrium to be in the past, but also because you need to assume a certain number of people per households. And with changing demographics in the country and certainly in different cities at the moment, you just can't say that the average person per household should be 3 or 4 or 5. It depends. It's different depending on your situation, your history, where you've come from, and your family makeup. So we tend to steer away from saying we're X hundred thousand or X tens of thousands properties short. But I think it's fair to say we have been short for a long period. We didn't build enough following the GFC. And so we're going to need to continue to build property. There's going to be a question around migration. So I already mentioned that, you know, international migration and travel is going to be significantly impacted. And we do have relatively or very high numbers of net migration position right now. So average of 45 to 55,000 people coming in net per year. Of course, we're going to see a reduction in that if we close our borders. Excuse me, I'm just going to just clear my throat. Sorry about that, too much talking. You know, there will be a significant reduction in people obviously traveling for tourism purposes. But the flip side of that is going to be that, you know, New Zealanders will want to move back. Not COVID-19 symptoms, thank you, Graham. Just dry throat. There will be a reduction in obviously people traveling, but Kiwis are going to move home. We've already seen people overseas say, you know, now's the time to go back to New Zealand. People that were holidaying as well, cutting their time short and coming back. And we're going to see a reduction in New Zealanders moving overseas as well. And, you know, never try to get too political on these things, but you can say whatever you want about Jacinda Ardern. There's almost no doubt that she has an excellent international reputation, and she's done wonders for our country internationally as with a reputation anyway. And what that could mean is that people do look to move here. So, yes, we might be more restrictive on that, but if we do get our economy up and running quickly, and we hopefully don't see too much of an impact, we could actually require people to start to go into jobs as well. We might have to source people from overseas, which would mean actual migration here, citizenship, residency, to come and fill some of the jobs if we need that as well, depending on what unemployment does. And tied to that, there's so many factors here, is what happens with potential retirees. So people that are close to retirement, people that are over the retirement age, they might see this as an opportunity to just retire. Maybe they're feeling the pressure of having to work. Maybe their work has reduced and they just make it the call to say, you know what, now I'm going to retire. I won't try and get back into the workforce after this lockdown ends. And so you might see a speeding up of some retirees, and that could open up some jobs for young people, but also for migrants to come into it too. So from that perspective, and tying it back to the original question, was if there's demand from property comes from people and a growing population, and a big chunk of that is from migration, we might actually see our population continue to grow at a fast rate, which means demand for property, which means we need to continue to build property as well. And that's going to be in the main centres, including Auckland. And the key thing will be Auckland needs properties in the right places. And the infrastructure spend from the government in terms of making, you know, the better light rail and all the transport and better hubs so people can actually live a bit further away but still be close to public transport, that investment is needed more now than ever. And so that'll be a key thing to watch for, that is that we still need to keep building, and it'll just be the right type of properties for people who still are continuing to work and need to still get into a CBD.
Great, that's fantastic. We had a question earlier on, Nick, which we just skipped through because I wanted you to keep on the momentum that you're going. So this is going sideways a little bit.
Great, how to see some questions.
How will CoreLogic consider valuations from now? Will you be factoring in future possibilities or continue to assess on historical values?
Yeah, so for valuations for CoreLogic, so what we do is we have a couple of things. We manage a valuation panel that the banks obviously use when they need to get a valuation for a property, when they're going to secure a mortgage, when they're going to give a mortgage out for a borrower. And what happens in that process is that they can use an automated valuation, which is a model of what the property is worth, which if you're a mortgage advisor, you can have access to those figures as well. Or if the bank requires so, they can kick that to either a desktop valuation, where a valuer can provide a valuation while sitting at their desktop and using all the information and photos they have, or they can go to a full market valuation where the valuer will visit the property. So in this case, CoreLogic doesn't do valuations itself except for the automated valuation. We've been working closely with our analytics team to understand what impact will, firstly, a reduction in sales volumes have on the model. And then, of course, if there's going to be a downturn, and what impact will that have, and how fast will the model be to react? So the first one is they've been running some scenario analysis to understand what would the impact of, if we have a 50% reduction in sales volumes, or 75% or 90%, what impact does that typically have on the model? And they run scenarios back in time to understand that. And the key thing is the forecast standard deviation, which is a measure of accuracy, blows out. So we'd still put a figure of 800,000, for instance, but it's likely that's going to be less accurate. So we wouldn't be as confident in that figure anymore, because we don't have as many comparable sales to compare to be absolutely sure of that property price being true. Not much we can do about that. Your reduction in sales price is going to have an effect on that model. So then it's really up to us, and this is what we're doing every day, is working with the banks as to how they understand what's going on and assess risk at a more granular level to know when they should require a full market valuation or a desktop valuation or a virtual valuation, where the valuer doesn't have to go into the property. And so we're working daily with them on that to ensure that they're making the right decisions for where we're really unsure about what the value of a property is going to be. In terms of an AVM, an automated valuation model, picking a turn in the market, again, very, very difficult. And the other thing we're working with the banks on is to say, we can't really do much about that. The model can only use the data it's got. So what we're trying to do is load them up with other pieces of information, including things like what's happening with the CMA reports, what are we seeing at the front line, the few sales that do come through, try and understand them really well so that they can apply another filter over top of their use of the AVMs. They're not going to stop using them. If they still fit within their criteria, they will still use them. They will just have to have an extra layer of caution, I suppose, around when they do use an AVM and when they don't. And that's one thing that could flow through to obviously mortgages, and the speed of application, the speed of getting a mortgage could be slowed down. There might not be as many people able to go through that AVM process, which, why is it there? It's faster and it's cheaper. So we may see a little bit of a change in that part of the industry.
Thanks, Fred. I think, people are, and one of the questions I think was really interesting was around, people's work habits are going to change. We maybe be working more remotely, and therefore the people that we're commuting every day up to, from Hamilton to Auckland, may not see that as such a necessary commute every day anymore as we change our everyday habits. How do you think that's going to impact on the regions that support the big cities? Do you think there's going to be a move which will push the value up in those regions because of that?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think it depends on the industry in those regions. Yes, I think you're right. There's going to be absolutely a change in work habits, especially in the short term, where, as you say, people are going, oh, this actually works. We can continue to act like this, and businesses should hopefully have gone, oh, yeah, we actually have got the BCP and plan and process, and we know how this works. Whether or not you see a significant move to the regions because people want to go that far from the main centres, I think is a big call. Of course, there's lifestyle reasons people move to those regions, but a lot of people still like the big cities for everything they offer. And often there's more safety in the big cities as well, when there's going to be job losses around other parts of the country. So, for big firms, yes, you could potentially work from home. But does that mean that you're going to move from, if you're already living in Auckland, are you going to then go, I'm going to move to Whangarei or Hamilton or something because I can still do my job from there? I think that's a pretty big change in consumer behaviour or in employee behaviour. And I'd say it's probably a bit too dramatic to call at this stage. Certainly we'll see a change in habits. Whether or not it's enough to see a massive change in people's attitudes and actually moving to those regions instead is a pretty big consideration. There will be appeal, cheaper property prices, As I said, that lifestyle will be there. But the other thing here is that while I think, you know, and this is a question about consumer behavior in general, while I think that, yes, this will, you know, probably change our attitudes and some things forever, we do also tend to have relatively short memories with a lot of things. And we see this all the time. You know, some of the attitudes that were expressed throughout the GFC, well, we'll never go back to this. We'll never go back to that. And actually, quickly, we've slowly gone back to some of those behaviours. We see the same thing when it comes to earthquakes. You know, we see a real nervousness when there's any strong earthquake. People get really nervous about buying certain types of properties or properties in certain locations. And we see a dip in transactions, in volumes, in demand, and in prices in certain areas when we have a significant earthquake, or well, not significant, but in one that has enough coverage, but doesn't have too much damage, where people go, I'm not going to buy an apartment because of the earthquakes, or I'm not going to buy coastal because of the earthquakes, or because of coastal sea rise, and they've seen more information come out. But typically it lasts 6 months, and then people go back to exactly what they were doing beforehand because they have a short-term memory. I'm not saying that's going to happen here. I don't think we're going to quickly forget what we've gone through in this period of time. But I do think that at some stage, you know, businesses will probably go back to some level of normality where they're still going to be operating in offices and behaving the way we were 6 weeks, 6 months ago.
Yeah, so we're seeing what we don't really know what the impact of this lockdown is going to be on property prices right now, right? Because we haven't come out the other side of that, you know, another 2 weeks, hopefully, and we'll be loosened up a little bit by region or by activity or by from level four to level three, whatever it's going to look like. But it's going to be a very slow come back to normal, right, for us in New Zealand. So, you know, we don't know what that impact's going to be. Have you got any modelling at all around if it's going to be a 10 or a 20% hit straight off the bat, for example, because people don't want to go out and see open homes and people don't want to list because they're nervous and people don't want to buy. So it may be a really stilted environment coming out of this for a little while. What speed a recovery could be like if you were a 10% reduction in valuations? What type of take-up do you have after that? Like what timeframes? Have you done any modelling around any timeframes like that at all?
Not modelling. And I think because, you know, to have a model, you kind of need to train it on the previous history. We just don't have anything like this. We do have a model for sales volumes. And of course, we know there's essentially no volumes right now. But when we come to year end, we're expecting about a 15 to 20% drop in sales volumes. And what we're talking about there is last year, we had 85,000 transactions in the residential property market. We were projecting 88,000 this year. And what it is, it's a simple macroeconomic model that has things like interest rates, unemployment levels, GDP, interest rates. All those things go into this model. And we've got forecasts of those from Reserve Bank and Stats New Zealand and the like. And we put them into the model. And it's a pretty good predictor of what happens with sales volumes, how many transactions happen. So it was 85 last year, 88 previously for this year, and we're now projecting that to drop to 70 to 75. It is changing every time these GDP forecasts change as well, so it potentially could drop a little bit more because mostly all the GDP forecasts are reducing every time we get a new one. So we may be looking at the lower end of that, so 70,000 down from 85,000. It does expect some sort of level of return to normality. We're going through a period of, you know, essentially no transactions when we should have 6,000-7,000 per month. But our expectation is that we will see a lift. We just see a deferment. When we talk to agents and investors or other people that are in the market, most of them have said, it hasn't changed my decision. It's just changed the timing of that decision. So if that is true and that is what plays out once we come out of the lockdown, you might see an actual lift in sales or listings, which will flow through to sales volumes for the couple of months afterwards. The flow through to prices is way more difficult to predict. But for us to see a drop in sales values, you need to see vendor and buyer expectations at the same level. And for vendors to drop their price, there generally needs to be, you know, a reason for them to do that. So are they desperate to sell? Are they willing to take a lower price because they need the money or they need to get rid of that property? And that's where we don't think there is seems to be the nervousness in the market yet because of all these deferment schemes, the support to wages, which we've never seen before, and the hope obviously being that defers it. Then the question is going to be, in 6 months, do we see that that trouble just pops up then, when people suddenly see their mortgage payments start back up, their business has actually gone out of business and they don't have the wage support anymore, and then they have to start selling. The hope would be that people prepare for that now, even though they are getting wages and they still have a job and they aren't paying their mortgage, so they start preparing for that now so they can adjust what their costs are going to be in the future, so you don't have a flood of properties and a flood of forced sales in 6 months' time. And that's why I think our nervousness or our concern around there being a massive drop in values is reduced. The one caveat to that, I think, is the mentality of some people I've spoken to, and it is anecdotal, and we're always careful not to take anecdotes as the business or, you know, real data. But the expectation that some people might have, where I bought my property for 500 grand 10 years ago, it's increased to $1 million now, it's doubled in price, let's say, if I sold it 6 months ago. Now, I just want to sell it. I previously would have hoped for that million. Now I don't really care. I'll take 850 or 900. And if you get enough people doing that, because enough people have held property for a long period of time, and they will have earned a lot of money on paper of those properties, if they start to want to sell, and they do continue to drop their price just to get rid of it, and demand's not really there, and there's people waiting for bargains, and they just wait for that property price to come down, if enough of that happens, then we would see prices start to drop across the board, because that would set the tone for the rest of the market. And then things can start to snowball, because everyone else goes, oh, what, prices are going down 5%, 10%? I better sell now rather than wait longer, because it could go down 15%. So that's the side of it, I think, is there'll be a slow drop in prices. And that's more likely than a significant drop because of forced sales. So that's where I see the potential for what prices could do over the next 6 to 12 months. The other side of it is, I know that the projections for the economy getting back to normal, and this is where you've got to look really, what are the economists saying about what's going to happen to the economy? How fast we get back on our feet? How many businesses do just go through a four-week blip and go back to some level of normal? And how, as you said, how do the restrictions get lifted? You know, yes, we might be able to go out again, but you're not going to be able to go to restaurants, packed restaurants. You're not going to be able to go to events. You might go to a cafe that has massive spaces in its seating, so they're not going to do the same turnover as before. So you're not going to have the flow through the economy that you did 6 months ago. That's going to take, who knows, 12, 18 months before you see that stuff come back. And then when you get to that point, that's when you can start to talk about people having more money to spend, to buy property, to transact, and getting back to some level of normality where you might see prices even lift again.
Do you have a view on the commercial sector at all?
It's not a specialty, let's say. I spoke to some commercial valuers yesterday, and they went through the valuation round for some businesses recently, and they were absolutely adjusting their valuations down depending on industry. You know, offices, they weren't dropping by too much, but absolutely restaurants down by upwards of 20%. So that is definitely the thinking within the industry, is, you know, these properties, because their businesses aren't going to have the same amount of foot traffic and things going on, they are reducing the overall value of those properties. So that is going to flow through to that. And we're awaiting a bit more information from the government in conjunction with the Property Council as to what support there's going to be for commercial tenants. I know places like Harvey Norman have already come out and said, you know, they're just not going to pay their rent. They're not open. They're not going to pay their rent. There could be some questions around that, but the Property Council have been working with the government around, you've provided rental wage support, provide some business support, you've provided mortgage deferment for residential, but nothing for commercial. And so we're expecting something out, I think, tomorrow at the latest. So we might know a bit more about the support for commercial, and then we'll understand what that might mean for the overall commercial property market over the next few days.
Yeah, there's certainly been a call for rent relief for commercial properties, and you know, it's most probably the next thing to come off the rank, like you said. So we're all sitting and waiting for that in our businesses as well. So it'll be interesting to see what that package looks like. But the government has been certainly very generous and decisive with their packages that they've brought out, as they have in a lot of countries as well. So, you know, kudos to the government for trying to get ahead of some of the pain that's coming our way. So we've got another one here. We're going into winter now. Spring is now fading, unfortunately. Daylight savings ended again, unfortunately. Will that add to an even star recovery?
Can you repeat that? I'm just going to find the question on the side.
Oh, at the very bottom, I think. We're going into winter now. It's because I ad-libbed through it. That's fine. We're going into winter now. Spring is now fading. Daylight savings has ended. Will that add to an even slower recovery? Is that a mood question, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, in general, you know, people, you know, like to list their property at the best of times. You know, November is the strongest time for listing a property, and the largest number of properties that come onto the market happens in November. And that's slightly ahead of the February, March period where people get in before winter hits. And of course, that is because, you know, properties are seeing their best light during those periods, and that's when people generally think they get the best price. there's more buyers and sellers in the market. So yes, we do tend to see a bit of a slowdown in listings over winter. It doesn't necessarily affect prices too much. But I think the key thing here is if we actually do see a lift in listings, that's probably going to be the key thing to watch for, as opposed to the general feel of seasonal, typically seasonal effects on the market. It's going to be about what happens with listings. Do we see a lot of people who start to list their property, maybe not desperate to sell, but they are keen to reduce some of their debt or raise some money to support themselves if they're expecting more tough times to come. So it'll probably weigh on people's mind, but maybe it'll have actually less of an impact than other years when there hasn't been everything else going on.
So we had a question here around the LVR. I don't know how much you know about this, what the inside you've got on the LVRs, but do you think the restrictions will be pulled back to 80% to stimulate the market? Do you reckon it's one of the good levers they could pull or not? Would it make a difference?
Yeah, it's a really interesting one. It's hard to read the Reserve Bank right now. Obviously, they've been talking a lot about trying to support and help get through, and they have deferred the capital requirements for the bank. So the fact that banks had to hold more money was going to be from 1st of July this year has been pushed back, and that is to try and help them lend. But, you know, all the rhetoric from the Reserve Bank in the last few years has been about financial stability. And the reason we are in a position now where we shouldn't see so much pain is because almost everyone, and I know not everyone, should have a 20% deposit, 20% equity in their property because of those restrictions. And in many ways, that sets us above the rest of the world who haven't had such strong restrictions on their property market since 2013 in our case. So you could look at that to be a success and say, don't tweak with those ones. And are there other things they can do to support the market? So look, early days, tough to know. I would probably at this stage still be surprised to see too much change there. But I think once the market starts to reopen and we do start to see transactions through, and we work closely with the Reserve Bank, if they believe the market does need a lift because it is having a greater impact on the wider economy, then they may look at that as an option. And I think your point being increase the investor restrictions back to 80% rather than the owner-occupier, first-home buyer, lower than 80%, higher than 80%, that's probably a good point, that it'd be tweaking the investor ones rather than the owner-occupier ones. But it's a very good question.
Okay, so going sideways a little bit into rural properties and farms, do you see them increasing in price or sales? And do you think the government will try and stimulate the rural economy outside of the package that's already that Shane Jones has got, he could do some work in this area as well with that package. Do you think there will be an increase in prices in the rural sector?
Yeah, rural is a really interesting one, and something we've heard over the last week or two has been, part of the increase in capital requirements on the banks was, the assessment of different lending and how risky it is. And commercial, rural, seen as more risky than residential. And so banks would have to hold more capital against those type of loans. And we already had seen, even though the restrictions hadn't come in or the increased requirements hadn't come in, we'd already seen and heard about the banks tightening up some of their lending to those areas in anticipation of having to hold more capital against those loans. With the deferment of those capital requirements, we have heard anecdotes of the banks loosening up and actually going to the farms and rural and saying, actually, we're happy to lend you a bit more than we were 6 months ago. And so this is partly because they've gone, geez, we don't want to be too exposed. And because rural is likely to be you know, one of the economies or one of the industries least impacted by the coronavirus and trade and all these things, that actually they see them as a more safe industry to be invested in. And so that may make it more easy for farms and rural industries to access money from the banks. And that's from a credit perspective. From a government perspective, I'd say they're pretty well aware of that as well, that if we need a strong economy, we're going to look to these more stable economies right now, these industries right now, and that would include rural. So, yeah, I think that's a really good point, and that we will see the value of rural and farms increase because it's easy to get credit, and the government should be looking to support those that industry as well. Of course, there's going to be politics involved in this. You know, there's been a lot of stuff going on with RMA and other things going through Parliament. So whether we see a loosening of that go that far, I'm not so sure. But certainly I think they'll see it as a very solid industry and needs to be looked after to keep our economy as solid as possible and as attractive as possible.
So we've got a question on the side here about the lifestyle block market values near major cities. Does that flow onto that, that logic flow onto that, or not so much because it's more of a lifestyle choice?
I hadn't thought about it, to be honest. And my gut feel, my initial feel is probably I wouldn't see it changing too much. You know, maybe there's the appeal that, yeah, you can work from home. Maybe people want more space. I know myself, I've got three young children in a three-bedroom house, and I now feel like I don't have a big enough house. You know, so maybe people, and also, you know, talking to my friends who have got kids slightly older or with a bigger property, they've felt less cooped in. So maybe for lifestyle purposes, people think, you know, maybe I do need a bigger property so we've got more space for the family. So there might be little things around the margin there where people are going to go through a big change in their mentality now. They're going to go, some people will be like, actually, maybe we'll have someone at home full time and not have two workers. Maybe some will definitely have two workers because they can't handle the kids anymore. You know, there is going to be a big change in family dynamic through this, and property will be a big part of that. I need a bigger property. I need a smaller property because of my money situation, or I need a bigger property because there's not enough space. Lifestyle blocks could fit into that, you know, more area for the kids to roam around in, rather than, yeah, a small house where you've only got a TV for entertainment and you can't get onto your local park. But again, hopefully restrictions are lifted soon. You can go back to your local park. You can start to do some sort of social interaction that's not going to be too much of an impact for too much longer. Certainly for me, I'm going crazy here.
No, I appreciate that. Well, I've got an 18, a 20, and a 22-year-old. So, you know, we're in a good space here, actually. It's really nice.
Except for your internet usage.
Yeah, apart from the teams in the street, right? You know, it's, you know, it gets to the time about 11 or 12 o'clock where they up their usage. You go into Call of Duty and Animal Crossing and everything else that they're downloading at the moment. It goes a bit insane here. Then we have to wait for them to go to sleep again at 3 o'clock in the morning. So, yeah, it's all good though. So I'd just like to, if you just like to wind up with some, you know, so the participants on today are mainly financial advisors. They're good advice to their clients. You know, we've got a lot of mortgage advisors on today as well, investment advisors, financial planners. You know, if you were to give them some parting words of advice about what they should be saying to their clients in terms of, you know, the advice, you know, sell now, sell later, wait, watch, what would be your parting words to them?
Yeah, cool. Briefly, just see a question on the international side of things. I just want to touch on that briefly and then I'll do a little summary. The other thing as well is to look at New Zealand and the government, and they've been able to respond so well because of our low debt position in New Zealand. 20% of our GDP is debt in New Zealand. Australia's a little bit higher. Italy, for instance, is 130% of their GDP is debt. So they can't respond at the same rate, and that's why we've had a significant support here. And so that's really set us in good stead. The average across most OECD countries is 70%. So we're in a really good position internationally. But of course, the impact of international economies is going to weigh on New Zealand as well in terms of how that flows through. So we're going to be considerate of what happens internationally and how that will impact our economy longer term. So we do need to keep an eye on that one. So I just want to touch on that one briefly as well. In terms of an overall summary, I did write some notes down because there is so much to go over. So I just want to make sure I touch on all those points. There is downside risk to New Zealand property. So we need to be aware of that. Of course, it's not everything rosy. We're not going to continue at the same rate we've seen previously. There is downside risk. We're getting more information every day, every week. And the key is understanding what that is doing, what support that's providing, and what likely impact that's going to have. And it's very difficult, obviously, forecast any impact that's going to have on the overall property market in terms of values, especially. Property is less volatile than anything else. And you know, one thing we haven't touched on is if people have money and they want to invest in something, it's very difficult to, you know, go into the stock market right now. I know there's opportunities for people, so that's going to be a consideration for them. Opportunities are presented by downturns, but obviously a lot of people will be nervous, especially those smaller mums and dad investors type. They're going to be nervous about investing in the stock market, especially if they've got long memory back to the 80s. So if they've got money, you know, potentially they're going to look to continue to invest in property because of the bricks and mortar, and you know, they've got something to see and hold, and it has been held up so much. And of course, now seeing the support from the government, Reserve Bank and banks, you go, you know, property prices might be held up because of the support from the actual government itself. So it's less volatile and slower to react. So you don't often get forced into things, and it's shown it's got significant support from the government and the Reserve Bank. We know transaction activity will be reduced. People will put high commitment decisions on hold, so they're going to restrict that, but hopefully take the time to figure out what their financial situation is going to look at long term. And no doubt this government response will create this cushioning impact. So if they're not forced to sell, if they're not actually needing the mortgage repayment deferral, I would suggest they don't actually do that because it could lift their payments in the future. Only use that if you need it. And look, the depth and duration of this pause really depends on the overall coronavirus situation. How long are we in significant and proper lockdown? How long are we going to be in restricted movement periods before we can come out the other side? And so, you know, this is an ever-changing position. As we move through the different stages, hopefully we'll get a better feel for what market activity is going to do. But the advice is always to say, try and be controlled, be constrained. The overall fundamentals of the New Zealand property market are still relatively strong when you look at interest rates staying low for even longer, likely demand to stay up in terms of the need for accommodation because of population increase. But we need to caveat unemployment and GDP will have a weighting impact on the property prices. So, you know, we're not expecting things to charge off, but there are some fundamentals holding the market up that we don't expect values to drop away significantly in the near future.
Great, Nick. This has been absolutely amazing. Thank you very much for your time. I'm sure the participants have had a great insight into the property market and your thoughts on it. And obviously you bring a lot of knowledge with you, so thank you for that. Just want to remind the participants that tomorrow we have the FMA presenting on the AML and the COVID-19 environment and how you can stay compliant. Not quite as much as interesting as you are today, Nick, but still really important. So thanks, Nick. Thanks, participants, for coming on. I really appreciate your time, and stay safe until tomorrow.
Thank you all. Thank you. Great to chat. See you.
Bye.